Hello and welcome along to the second series of F1 Rewind, the podcast where we delve into the Formula One archives to bring you the stories and events which happened on each day in motorsport history. Hello everybody, welcome back to F1 Rewind. When I ended the first series of the podcast, 1 week before the scheduled start of the 2020 season, I was doing so thinking that I'd be so busy writing about the on-track action that there wouldn't be enough time for me to keep up putting together and recording a podcast every week. Funny how things turn out, isn't it? I hope you're all well and staying safe, and while we may have to wait a little bit longer for some racing in 2020, I thought now would be the perfect opportunity to help keep you entertained and take another walk down F1's memory lane. And we're kicking off Season 2 on an important day in Formula 1 history. May the 13th is the day on which the table knife was reputedly created in France in 1637, the day that Pope John Paul II was shot and wounded in 1981, and the day on which the final episode of Frasier aired in the United States in 2004. It's also the day that the first ever World Championship Formula One race was held in 1950, the day that a former racing driver turned entrepreneur died in 2018, and the day on which everybody's favourite Venezuelan took his only Grand Prix victory in 2012. More on all of that later. So, ready to turn back the years and take a voyage through F1's 70-year history? Let's do it. Here are all the stories and events from the 13th of May. If you listened to the last series of F1 Rewind, you'll know that I usually start with driver birthdays. However, I'm going to mix that up a bit this time around. And it seems only fitting that today we should start with another birthday, the birth of Formula One itself. I'm sure you'll read plenty about that day in 1950 at Silverstone today, so instead of giving you a blow-by-blow account of what happened, here's some interesting facts about the 1950 British Grand Prix instead. Firstly, there were a number of support races on the day, one of which was won by a young Stirling Moss, and another, a Formula 3 race, saw Bernie Eccleston competing. Secondly, the 1950 British Grand Prix remains the only F1 race which the reigning British monarch has been present at. Members of the royal family toured the circuit and chatted to the drivers before the race. The race was eventually won by Giuseppe Farina, who'd go on to be crowned Formula 1's first champion later in the year. He was driving for Alfa Romeo, and it was the first time that the Italian team had competed on British soil. They completely dominated the event. The first non-Alfa finisher completed the race 2 laps behind the leaders. Also in the race, Reg Parnell hit a large hare. This was seemingly a common occurrence back in the day at Silverstone. The first race there in 1947 was referred to as the Mutton Grand Prix due to the high number of sheep around the track, not all of which were still in one piece by the end of the race. Anyway, despite Parnell hitting a hare, he went on to become the first driver to score a home podium in F1 history. The hare, however, was not quite as lucky. As Formula One prepares to get racing again with races behind closed doors, the idea of a Grand Prix without fans in the grandstand seems rather alien. But it's not the first time that a closed-door F1 event has been proposed, as Autosport reported on this day in 2006. Bernie Eccleston was apparently keen to introduce a Mediterranean Grand Prix to the calendar, with plans for the event to rotate between different locations in a similar vein to the European Grand Prix. One of those locations was Valencia, another was Greece, and the other was Paul Ricard. Paul Ricard has since rejoined the F1 calendar as the host of the French Grand Prix. But when plans for a Mediterranean Grand Prix were mooted back in 2006, the circuit was still very much only a test track, with no spectator facilities. The then head of the track, Philippe Gogien, said that the venue would be open to hosting a race without a conventional crowd. Instead, it would be a race for VIPs only, with Formula One's Paddock Club experience still able to operate. Ultimately, the event never came to fruition. If you were wondering, the Mediterranean Grand Prix was formerly a non-championship race in the 1960s and became a Formula 2 race in 1965. It was held in Sicily, and in the 1980s, Formula 2 became Formula 3000, and the race continued to be won by future F1 stars. It was most recently held in 1998, where Juan Pablo Montoya took victory. In 2016, motorsport.com reported that a Mediterranean Grand Prix could be held in Bari, in Italy, in 2020. But that too is yet to happen. Any person who has a section on their Wikipedia page entitled Lucky Escapes is probably worth telling you about. So, here's the story of Irishman Duncan Hamilton, who died on this day in 1994. Firstly, some background. Hamilton fought in World War II and took up motorsport after the war was over, with a highlight being a fourth place finish in the 1948 Dutch Grand Prix. He went on to make five entries into World Championship Grand Prix, with the best result of seventh, also at the Dutch Grand Prix, in 1952. Hamilton also raced in sports cars and won the 24 Hours of Le Mans for Jaguar in 1953 alongside co-driver Tony Rolt. Now, there's a little bit of a motorsport legend surrounding Rolt and Hamilton and their Le Mans victory that year, and they were both apparently drunk when they won. The pair were originally disqualified from the event during practice when the Jaguar headed out on track with the same number on it as another car on the circuit. When they were eventually reinstated, the pair had already gone to a local bar and drunk their fair share of alcohol. As if this story wasn't already bizarre enough, the team tried to sober Hamilton up by giving him coffee during the pit stops, but he refused to drink it, and instead was given brandy. Apparently, the brandy was so effective that Hamilton didn't stop when he hit a bird at 130 miles per hour during the race and broke his nose. This is Hamilton's account of the story. Both Roll and the team boss have denied that they were drunk. Nevertheless, it's quite the tale. And we haven't even got on to Hamilton's lucky escapes, such as the time his own driverless Bugatti overtook him going down a hill after coming loose from being towed, or the time he crashed out of a race and into an electricity pylon in Portugal and was thrown into a tree before dropping out of it onto the side of the circuit. Hamilton miraculously made it to the age of 74 and died from lung cancer on May the 13th, 1994. Hamilton has an autobiography titled Touch Wood, which, based on what I've just told you, is probably worth a read. Another interesting character next, Archie Scott Brown, who was born on the 13th of May 1927. As a result of his mother contracting German measles when he was in the womb, Scott Brown had a partially formed right arm and badly deformed legs. Despite having a multitude of operations in his youth, it didn't stop him from living his life to the full, and he was a highly skilled racer. Even Juan Manuel Fangio was impressed by Archie Scott Brown's car control. His disability meant that it was difficult to obtain an international racing license, and he was even banned from racing after a race meeting at Snetterton in 1954. The ban was overturned 3 months later, with help from Earl Howe, the then president of the BRDC. Despite having to overcome significant adversity, in the series which he did race in, he was successful, taking wins in club and national events in the early 1950s. He won 71 races in total during his relatively short career. His only Formula One appearance came at the 1956 British Grand Prix with Connaught, where he retired after 16 laps. He died only 2 years later, following a collision in a sports car race at Spa while he was racing for the lead with Maston Gregory. Another two driver birthdays next, and Theo Helfrich is first up. Born on the 13th of May 1913 in Frankfurt, Helfrich is notable for being the German Formula 2 champion in 1953. 1 year previously, he'd finished as runner-up in the 1952 24 Hours of Le Mans, and also made his Grand Prix debut at the 1952 German Grand Prix. He entered the German Grand Prix a further two times in the next 2 years, with his 12th place finish in 1952 being the only time that he completed a full race distance. He went on to help develop sports cars and raced in hill climb events and Formula 3 races until ending his racing career in the late 1950s. Next, Paddy Driver, who was born on this day in 1934. Driver competed in only two F1 Grand Prix weekends. He entered the 1963 South African Grand Prix, but a broken steering arm meant that his car was destroyed and he was unable to take part. It would be 11 years before he made another appearance in F1, again at the South African Grand Prix, where he retired after only 6 laps. Now, Driver's F1 record may lead people to believe that he only entered races as a bit of a hobby, but he actually had a racing career that spanned over 40 years. He didn't just race on four wheels, but on two as well, and finished third in the 1965 Motorcycle Grand Prix season. You name it, Driver had probably driven it at some point in his career. Harry Schell died on this day in 1960. Schell is notable for being the first American to take part in a Formula One Grand Prix, doing so at the 1950 Monaco Grand Prix, from which he retired on the first lap. In that race, Schell became the first ever driver to start a World Championship Grand Prix in a rear-engined car. That was his first of 56 Grand Prix starts, during which he drove for BRM, Van Wall, Maserati, and started in one race, the 1955 Monaco Grand Prix, with Ferrari. Schell finished on the podium twice in his career, coming home third in the 1957 Pescara Grand Prix and second at the 1958 Dutch Grand Prix. Schell died during practice for the 1960 International Trophy event at Silverstone, crashing at the Abbey Curve. Next up, Les Leston. Prior to being a racing driver, Leston was a drummer in London-based jazz band The Clay Pigeons, which was led by fellow racer and part-time trumpeter Johnny Clays. After serving in the Second World War, Leston turned his hand to racing and won the non-championship Luxembourg Grand Prix in 1952, a race which Peter Collins and Stirling Moss also took part in. He won the British Formula 3 Championship in 1954 and went on to make three Formula 1 appearances in 1956 and 1957, but failed to finish on any occasion. After his racing career and after a fiery crash, Leston pioneered the marketing of flameproof racing overalls, with many of the leading drivers soon using Les Leston's products. He was also a pit reporter for the BBC's Grand Prix coverage in the 1960s, under large cruiser which he sailed at weekends, and hosted a jazz radio show. He died on this day in 2012, at the age of 91. Lastly for driver death today, Harry Stiller. Stiller never drove in a World Championship F1 race, but he did finish 11th in a non-championship race at Alton Park in 1967. He raced in a variety of categories in his career, winning the British F3 Championship in both 1966 and 1967. He actually shares the record for most F3 wins in a single season with Ayrton Senna. He also drove in Formula 2 and drove at the Le Mans 24-hour race twice. And after his racing career, when he became someone who entered his cars into races, he's notable for giving Alan Jones his first shot in F1, entering the Australian in a privately owned Hesketh car for four races in 1975. Away from the racetrack, Stiller created and developed a leisure park on the south coast of England in the late 1970s. And in the early 1980s, he was a pioneer of the pound shop concept, opening stores in towns in the northeast of England. He died on this day in 2018, at the age of 79. The 1950 British Grand Prix isn't the only F1 race which has been held on the 13th of May. In fact, since then, a further seven races have taken place on this date. The first was the 1956 Monaco Grand Prix, which Stirling Moss won after finishing 6 seconds ahead of Juan Manuel Fangio. With Peter Collins sharing Fangio's drive, this was the first World Championship Formula One race in which two British drivers finished on the podium. Fangio shared two drives that day and was classified in both second and fourth. But it was actually a bit of an off day for the legendary Argentinian. He made a bad start and ran wide on the second lap, resulting in two cars retiring. Fangio himself was able to continue, but later made another mistake, hitting the barrier at the chicane and returning to the pits. Angry with himself, he handed the car over to Eugene Castelletti. After half of the race distance passed, Ferrari called Peter Collins into the pits and ordered him to hand his car over to a rejuvenated Fangio. He went on to close down Moss's 45-second gap to just a handful of seconds, but despite Moss suffering his own problems following contact with a backmarker, the Brit held on to take victory. 40 years on from the first World Championship race, Nigel Mansell delighted Ferrari fans at the San Marino Grand Prix on this day in 1990 with his pursuit of Gerhard Berger. The moustached Brit didn't even let a spin prevent his charge. Unfortunately for the Tifosi, Mansell was to retire with mechanical issues. Riccardo Patrese took the win, which was his first win since the 1983 South African Grand Prix. It remained the record for the longest gap between two race wins until Kimi Raikkonen won the 2018 US Grand Prix. Also, for fans of niche stats, at the 1990 San Marino Grand Prix, Gabriele Tarquini set a new record for most failures to pre-qualify. It was the 17th time that he failed to reach qualifying. The 1979 Belgium Grand Prix also took place on this day, in which Alfa Romeo made their first appearance as a works team since 1951. In 2001, David Coulthard won the Austrian Grand Prix, a race in which Rubens Barrichello let Michael Schumacher by on the last lap, so that the German could finish ahead. Barrichello would do the same thing at the same track 1 year later, but the move would come under much more scrutiny. In 2007, the Spanish Grand Prix was held on this day, with that race resulting in Lewis Hamilton becoming the youngest ever driver to lead the championship. Driving for McLaren, he took the record from the team's founder, Bruce McLaren. It was also at the 2007 Spanish Grand Prix that Super Aguri scored their first ever points, with Takuma Sato finishing in 8th. And as for the most recent race to take place on this date, that was the 2018 Spanish Grand Prix, which is probably best remembered for Romain Grosjean's spinning antics on the first lap. But, of course, there is one race which took place on this day that I haven't mentioned yet. A tale that has gone down in F1 folklore. An episode so unbelievable that sometimes I have to watch it back just to check that it actually happened. On this day in 2012, Pastor Maldonado won the Spanish Grand Prix for Williams, fending off Fernando Alonso for the win. What a man, what a race, what a day. And we finish today's podcast with this headline from 2000. And it's not so much a major headline, but more a sign of how much things have changed in the sport in the last 20 years. On this day in 2000, Ferrari completed 2 test days at different circuits. While Rubens Barrichello drove 85 laps at Mugello, testing aerodynamics and tyres, Luca Badoa completed 40 laps at Fiorano, shaking down both the race cars and the T-car ahead of the European Grand Prix. F1 teams used to carry out a massive amount of testing back in the day, but that has since been restricted in an effort to save costs. In 2007, the amount of annual testing was limited for the first time, but even then, it was only limited to 30,000 kilometres per team. In 2010, in-season testing was banned completely. In 2012, there was in-season testing allowed at Mugello. It was banned again in 2013, before being reinstated in 2014. Keeping up? Since then, the amount of testing allowed has gradually reduced, and now there are only 6 days of pre-season testing allowed, and teams can carry out only 2 filming days per year using their current cars. The teams must run less than 100 kilometres on each of those 2 days. That's your lot for this week's episode of F1 Rewind. Fun collection of tales there, from the birth of Formula One, to the madness of drunk Duncan Hamilton, to the pound shop pioneer, the courageous tale of Archie Scott Brown, and Pastor Maldonado's only win. May the 13th has been quite the day in F1 history. It's my aim to bring you an episode of the podcast every week until Formula One returns, hopefully sooner rather than later. If you haven't already subscribed, be sure to do so wherever you're listening. You can find F1 Rewind on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you like to listen from. I'll be back next Wednesday with more tales from the F1 treasure trove. Take care, and I will see you then.